as he makes a point in various places, normally a hard postmodernist approach can lead to just cynicism in everything, unbelief in absolutely nothing. So the notion of postmodernist philosophy leading you to intimacy and meaning, that's pretty intense. Or Shagar does with it. So this notion of intimacy, there's a number of different tanaim, a number of different conditions and notions of intimacy. Also, full disclosure, besides being a rabbi, I'm also a psychotherapist, training mostly in couples therapy and sex therapy. I'm tossing that out there before we start, why specifically these essays and the notion of intimacy and connection are so important to me, for sure. It should be to everybody, but especially for me as a concern. So,
yes.
I was going to go with the original source, but
that's good.
Yeah, we're good to go. Okay, so famous quote from Rav Kook. We're going to lead off with that. We're a little less tied to one specific ma'amar today, and a little bit more in trying to give the full experience. So it says, "Ani v'ani b'toch ha'gora, I am an exile. Ha'ani ha'pnimi enu mitkalei la'adam." The existential I, is an exile. I myself am lost, as we see it. The wonderful slide, that landscape in the desert. I am lost. We've lost contact with ourselves. And this beautiful, beautiful piece in Arata Kodesh that everyone should take, read. At least three times a year I quote this Arata Kodesh, and every time I quote it, I still get chills down my spine. As the Mashiach that Rav Kook is speaking about, he says, Mashiach tikenu ruach apenu hu. He is the breath of our own lungs. If galut, exile, is a sense of existential loss, of not knowing who I am, of losing myself, and not in a good way, a la Eminem, but losing myself in a way that I don't know who I am, Mashiach's very power is the ability to bring the person back to themselves, because he's the very breath of your lungs. That Yirmiyahu calls him Ruach Apeinu. There's nothing as germane to the person, as personal as the breath in your own lungs, as life-giving, as a breath of fresh air, of you, and of you coming back to yourself. And our alienation, the alienation which takes place for a number of different reasons, that we are alienated from ourselves, is the strongest form of galut. So what I wanted to learn with you first is a piece. These are Shagar's drashot from Rosh Hashanah Selichot. They're fantastic. They're fantastic and moving. So, Joe, we're going to read the indented paragraph inside, just a little bit of background that he's drawing for us. He says, if one can imagine, the Harambam, what he says that a person should do teshuvah all the time as if it's his last day, and definitely on his last day they should come to themselves. So he says to remove the idea of teshuvah in a parochial sense. You're a bad boy, you're a bad girl, be a better boy, be a better girl. But to come back to oneself. So then he says, imagine if I could draw a picture for you, Rav Shagar, of a couple who are together many, many years. And it's been a long, long time. And the relationship has not been, altogether so great. And already this is their last goodbye. They're saying their last goodbye is the last months have ticked away as she's doted on him even at the end of his life. Even the relationship might have been the best. But then he turns to her and asks her for mechila as he's about to leave this world and go to the next. And Shagar says, well, at this moment, with this feeling, well, you know, what will happen? He says at the top of page 65, we should see over there, he says, Ha'im yimachel? Ha'im yalechu la'alamo v'tinato v'fusha b'libo? Will he forgive her? Will she forgive him? Hachmatza is a beautiful word in modern Hebrew, like al tachmitzen et mitzvot, et matzot et mitzvot, that he's made chametz into his life. He's let it slide. Hayachol lihiyot acheret, bizbasti et chayai. It could have been different. I've lost my life. V'adayim zocheret niurav tikvotav yom chupato. He remembers his youth, his hopes, the day of his chupa, et achzava sheba achar kach, et nisayonot hamitmodedot, and the letdown that followed, and the trials that he had, the tribulations of his life. Ma yachol la'avioto l'mechila. What could, you know, not just to appease himself and his wife, but to appease himself of the world. Ha'im yachol hu lisloach v'ulai lehodot. Can he forgive her? Can he thank her? So we're going to read a little bit from Anton Chekhov's, this is a funny thing that we're reading a Russian novel translated to Hebrew. But, okay. Ube'erev, kesheh shicha ayom, kara lefet el azaken. At the end, she calls to the old man, Ata zocher Yaakov? Yankala, do you remember? Shala ve'bita bo bechedva. She looked at him. Ata zocher lefinei 50 shana, natan lano bore olam tinoket, behira v'taltalim? Do you remember the girl with her little curls that Hashem gave us? Right? On his deathbed, his old wife is saying this to him. Haynu shaninu shneinu yoshvim tamid al safat nahar v'sharim shirim mitachad la'etz harava, under the willow tree. Do you remember how it was? Ulefeta pitom hechilu la'alot alibo hirurim v'yigim shonim. All of a sudden, his mind is flooded. His heart is flooded with emotions. Chazar v'zachar, he goes back, he remembers, ki b'imshoch kol yimei chayav lo richama me'arpa lo livevota me'odo. He really didn't pay such great attention to her. Chamishim v'shtayim hashanim shechayu b'bayit yachdav. That 52 years that they lived together, aruchot hayu, there was long. V'hine, ech kara davar, shebemeshach kol hazman hazeh, lo chashav aleha afilu machshava achat. That he didn't even think of her one thought. Right? Over 52 years, he didn't give her a second thought. Lo sam aleha ki'ilu hi kelev uchatul, like, you know, she's just like one of the pets in the house. He didn't, like, attend to her. Hari yom yom haita hi mesikata tanur, every day she would light the fire. Mevashelet v'ofa, cook and bake. She would have it mayim, she would draw water. Chotevet etzim, yishenamit v'mitato, and sleep in his bed. V'chol pam kishachazah shikur me'achat ha'chatunot, when he would come back drunk from one of the weddings. He was a violinist, as you'll see. Haita tola kinuro ala kotel v'yira kavod v'derech eretz. She would lift his fiddle, his violin, up and place it on the wall. U'mashkiva oto lishon, and then she would put him to bed. Et kol devar ma'ela asta b'sheket v'areset revaya v'charada lo. She took care of him all this time, and all of a sudden he's filled with thoughts of, like, I never really thought about her. Right? On his deathbed. How I became so estranged from all of this. Me'av nichmarim v'rachamim memalim et libo. He's all of a sudden aroused with this feeling, these feelings of mercy, of regret. Lomed hu ladat shelo rak hu saval elagam ishto. All the tsuris, all the problems that he had, also she suffered. So on the page, Ach pam lo pagashota. Ach be'etzem pa'am lo pagashot atzmo. He never met her. In the 52 years they were together, he never met her, and he never met himself. Hu shachach et kiyumo. He forgot his whole existence. Anu mitzuyim begalut. Hagalut hi galut hashchina. Hagalut galut hanitzotz ha'elokim sheba'adam. We've lost ourselves. We've lost the divinity inside of ourselves. Hachayim asuchofim otanu lepilut lasila'a. Limrotz ha'bilti na'ala'a achre ha'yisugim behebli hazman anachnu shochim et ha'ikar. Over the course of time, we lose ourselves. We forget ourselves. So this beginning that Rav Shagar is saying, the person is drawn to a sense of intimacy with themselves, a sense of intimacy and of remembering who they are. Because before we can talk about intimacy with another person, talk about intimacy with oneself. And that we've becoming estranged from oneself, and achat kama v'kama, to be estranged from, to be estranged from one's spouse. Look, I think I copied
78, 79, right. And I think 80.
Right.
It's cut off there.
Right, so there's nothing at the bottom of 80. So he says, we'll do this outside because I'm called Shesh Lazman, that that in a sicha, the sicha is called Chidush Intimiyut. Guess what intimiyut means, right? Right? That the renewal of intimacy, that the Yom HaZikaron, Shalosh Hashanah, that this memory creates for us when we go to that place, when we find ourselves, when we remind ourselves of what is, we become once again in touch, and intimately in touch with ourselves. And the opposite of intimacy is of course forgetting. The opposite of intimacy is this losing of oneself. At the very, very bottom, we can see this inside. Kishani mabita achora. When we look, I look behind myself. I look in the rearview mirror. Lo chalu shinuyei marchikei lechet. In any sam lev lezulat, I don't pay attention to anyone else. Hulom me'anyenoti. I'm not interested. Choser rikuz, our lack of focus, our lack of concentration. Hu totzah shel choser inyan pnimi amok. I'm just not paying attention bichlal. And we see, you know, modern technology has complicated this even more, of course. Although, as we also saw last week, technology can be our salvation. But we've lost focus, and losing our focus, we lose contact with everything and anyone. Just think about our dating apps, right? I'm trying to find a life partner by going like this. It works, but somehow or another it works. My wife's taught many girls in the Kalach classes as, you know, how they meet, J-swipe. It's like, but to begin, right? Right. So, but the thought that me not paying attention and just to the left is not interested, right? Baruch Hashem. But inyan hitanuk, chashifat ha'intimiyut. You know what delight is, he says? Delight is a search for intimacy. Ibariti et ha'intimiyut shebezulat. I've lost this intimacy, shehitanuko. And any mitanyen bo, I'm not interested. V'lo b'goralo, v'lo b'tikvatav, v'lo b'achzavatav. I don't want to. It's honey. I don't want it sting. V'lo ma'anyenoti, v'lo olamo, lo chashov b'enai. I don't want to be part of its world. K'dei lechadesh et ha'inyan b'enenu, alayla la'akiro b'enoshiyut. In order to renew our intimacy, we have to renew our personhood. Oh, as ere et kol inyan shelo, then I'll understand what it means. Memela egabe nekuda tanug shelo. If I can understand what it is to be a person, what it is to understand to be connected, to understand personal connection, then I can begin to understand the delight of intimacy. And until I do it, until I can, it doesn't interest me. And he says, and this is the hizachrut, memory, the remembrance of Rosh Hashanah. This is the Yom Kippidah, to be noted, to be noticed, to be remembered, to become intimate. Pigisha mechadash, a meeting once again. I would add that one of Rav Shagar's Talmidim, Rav Zinger, just put together a beautiful sefer called Tikkun Tefilati. And he's using this idea of intimiyut, understanding this idea of intimiyut, of intimacy, is what's missing in our tefillah. And he wrote a sefer full of exercises, targilim, poetry, both exercises and poetry, and tefillot, of trying to create an intimate encounter with your Creator. And as the goal of tefillah, as the goal of prayer, of trying to create the a notion of intimacy, of trying to create this notion and this feeling of nochachiyut, of being in His presence, of being in God's presence, and being intimate there. And that's a feeling and sense that we're trying to resolve, we're trying to return to. But you know, it's something that we're missing, something that we've lost. So this,
could we just further unpack this idea of intimacy and like what our operative definition is here? Because in this earlier case, right, the Chekhov story,
mm-hmm.
it seems to be related to awareness or appreciation. What exactly does it mean to have intimacy, both with oneself and with another, whether that other is another person or God?
So we're going to jump to it shortly.
Okay. I don't want to jump to God.
No, because it's a good question. I mean, it's part of what the slide is about. We're going to see something from the Rav about that, about this notion of of him quoting the Rav, because I realized when I got to school this morning early that I forgot the sefer from the Rav, and all of my goods for him are packed somewhere in the dungeon of Hillel in Brooklyn. And yeah,
that's why you were in the basement.
Oh no, I was in the basement looking for snowflakes. Go figure. Snowflake. We're having a winter party tomorrow, and we have a box full of snowflakes. But they were all locked away somewhere in the belly of Hillel. Hillel has a sub basement, and we have a box somewhere. So I spent a good hour looking for it when Rav Noam messaged me.
There's a deep metaphor there.
Yeah, looking for the snowflakes in the bowels of Hillel. Okay, so Rav Shagar uses one of the tools of postmodernism. One of the tools is hadikonstruksia, the deconstruction. Hadikonstruksia shel kedusha, a holy deconstruction, right? Because we remember that much like We noted at the beginning that Rav Shagar notes a word of caution, that to a certain extent that the hishtaviyut that one can run the gamut of a what he calls a hard postmodernism, that one can deconstruct anything and it all becomes just a question of power and a power and time. But to be able to ask the proper questions about all the structures that we have and the assumptions that we have about who, what, when, why, like good journalism. You know, there was Kufa, that there was a thing called good journalism, right? As opposed to echo chambers. So, but good journalism asks these questions. Also, good parshanut the same way, asks these questions. We have certain assumptions, certain hanachot that we have in life, and whenever we pass them by without the opportunity to examine them, we miss an opportunity really to come to an understanding of what they are. Again, not being able to miss the 90s joke, what is love? Don't hurt me, no more. That Shagar says, quoting Eva Louise in a book on the notion of romance, that as the centrality of religion declined during the closing decades of the 19th century and into the beginning decades of the 20th century, Romantic love was inevitably carried along by the new wave of secularization. Now, of course, it's interesting that you would find within all of the good sonnets that some of them are religious and some of them are romantic, or also even some of the poems of the Rishonim. Some of them are religious and some of them are romantic. But he says that the notion of romance and what he wants to deconstruct in order to understand a little bit, I guess, the differences between romance and intimacy and romance with intimacy, that romance became, you know, became the new God, as it were. With the decline of religion, then the search for that, you know, the thought that love would conquer all, love will be everything. It definitely raised its head the most in the 60s. You know, love, it was the Beatles. Love is everything, right? All you need is love. So of course, what the question which we'd go back to is, what is love? Besides, don't hurt me anymore. But what is love? What does that mean? What is this sense of the sense of love? So, is it that this idea of what romance and love is? It's this idea of that there's going to be a happy ending. You know, that the idea that we meet at a Friday. You know,
you have awkward hour here.
No awkward hour.
Awkward
hour. Isn't that awkward hour?
Oh, you mean between the end of davening?
Yeah.
Oh, sometimes we have that, right?
Oh, so you meet during we sometimes go on the road and visit other JLICs. It's a lot of fun. We call them road trip Shabbatonian. We take out two or three carfuls full of, you know, we wouldn't know what to do with them in Colombia. We'd have to just put the car someplace else. But we take trainfuls. But we
park
right, park all the way up in the Heights, take a subway down. But We would take vans down to Binghamton, up to Binghamton, down to Maryland. We'll go on the road, and there's an institution there known as Awkward Hour. Awkward Hour happens when davening bisman concludes, and you still have at least an hour until you're going to have dinner, and it's awkward hour because what are you really going to do for that hour? So it's awkward hour. Hence, so at awkward hour, that you glimpse someone across the room and they see you back, and it's love at first sight, and you both happen to be seniors, and you already have jobs already lined up, so then it's in the stars. So this was in October, so you get married in August, right? Or maybe the next August, and you go either moving in. Move into the Upper West Side, or maybe you take a place in the Heights, and commute down to Midtown for your first, both of your first law jobs. Until of course you find a different firm, or you decide that you want to change and become an accountant or something. Any case,
sounds good,
right? And there's that happy ending, Then we move to Teaneck, have a bunch of kids, send them to Frisch, and then send them back to Columbia. And we'll do it again. And I make fun, but my son just got his acceptance to YU, just like me. And so we're sort of finding that funny also. Maybe, you never know, he'll be a JLIC educator. Any case. Oh, yeah. So this thought that you're going to have that starry-eyed look, as they would say in the Mamaloshen, this 120 for 120 years, that you're never going to take your eyes out of each other's eyes, right? You're never going to not look like Sleeping Beauty and whatever this guy's name was. I think he was Prince Charming. Was it always the same Prince Charming? I never got that.
He navigates between different stories.
Exactly. Between different narratives.
Fair enough.
Exactly. He deconstructs the narratives. He's like that good guy. That good guy from last week. He's a good guy. But, and it's funny because we have this sort of you know, people like flame about it all the time on social media about the Disney princess syndrome, right? You think that it's really just going to be like that, right? It's just going to be, you know, and they lived happily ever after. And so Shagara said, I'm trying to remember who he quotes, I think it was Eloise also, that the world between fiction and fact starts to blur, that we really believe that's what's going to happen. We really believe that there's going to be this happily ever after. And then he says, you know, so then is it any wonder that then really the achzavot, right, that we spoke about in the first story from Chekhov about Rothschild's violin, that all the letdowns of life, that it wasn't the dream you look forever. That, you know, all these stories are all these romance novels are marriage between two different castes, right? Castes with an E at the end, right? Social classes, the riches, all old money and new money. All of these great stories of romance. Isn't that Romeo and Juliet, right? Love can't love conquer all? I mean, clearly that didn't work out so well. That doesn't love conquer all? There was another 90s song, I forgot what it was, and you know, I was too busy typing and I forgot to look it up, but it was even a song, it conquers all, it changes everything. But that's not true. We've seen that failed. You know, the high school sweetheart, our divorce rate is such that this legend that we're looking for of falling in love with a dreamy look, it's not real. You know, and Shagar is beginning now to, as we see, to deconstruct the notion of of the romance novel, of to take apart and say, well, when did this happen? It seems to have occurred, right? The looking for something, the passion is turned from, you know, the religious passionate literature, then is then turned towards, becomes more of a much more romantic, of a romantic theme, and the subject of that of those emotional aspirations. It, you know, instead of being God, it becomes the new God, love, or Aphrodite, Eros. Take them as take them as you are. But this romance, you know, what's all of that about? He says. In pop culture, marriage is usually perceived as the opposite. There's a song from the 70s. I knew a woman who became a wife. Right, and you know, leaving it for the 70s because it was the 70s. We're not judging the 70s, but that hey, you know, there's that romantic passion that was there, and then you know, it became humdrum and boring. We're no longer looking at each other's eyes. We've lost that loving feeling. Right, it's the opposite of it. In a psychoanalytic nature or description, it's the conception of the superego, society imposing on the id, which is the passion seeking part of the person. That all of a sudden there's this lust, there's that passion. But what happens when you attain that passion? Like, you know, sort of ends. It's sort of you get married, and the sequel. Well, what happens really with the sequel? My daughter's told me that there's this new thing, the sequel, it's called Descendants, right? Where they have the children of all of the characters from all of the Disney movies now getting into more trouble, right? And falling in love. Why? Because it's boring to be happily ever after, right? If you think about it, and I was going to tell her that because that's a little too cynical, though she's getting there too. But think about it. What happens? Is that really the adults are in the background and the descendants are there in the limelight? Why? Because you're old. It's boring. There's no passion. It's gone. Marriage is the opposite of romance. If that's the case, you know. So then, what's the toelis, or Shagar says, then for this search for love, this search for romance? What are we to do about it? Moreover, the search for wanting to have this sense of connection and relationship, which we've sort of spelled out over here, which is driven, of course, you know, by the id, by the, as we call it, the libido, the person's sense, thirst, and desire for life and love, and of course sex. And once it attains its goal, so you know, then it's either on to the next, or if I'm sticking with this partner, you know, so then it's going to become very boring very quickly, right? We're seeing how all of this goes, and as a result, we lose this sense of intimacy, we lose the sense of connection, right? And intimacy in saying that being able to connect and be close and share and be desired. But it seems that burns out, that runs out quickly, right? Or Shigari said, is setting this up as it seems to be these are two polar opposites. Are we clear? Are we okay? We're good. Okay. Bertrand Russell says, love is an anarchic force which, if left free, will not remain within any bounds set by law or custom, right? Now, let's unpack this for a moment. Love being this anarchic force, right? I forgot the two important Jewish words, right? We're a shear too. So, the two words are called tohu and tikkun, right? Tohu and tikkun. Tohu, where do you recognize tohu from? Right, tohu vavohu, tohu. Right, good translation for tohu?
Chaos,
right? The Shoresh, anybody Shoresh? So like to home, right? Like a great abyss, and I believe Rashi also says it's a cognate to astonishment, right? That there's a
Adam,
exactly. It's like, wow, that's deep. Wow. So anitohe is it, right? I'm astonished, right? So tohu of this chaos, right? This disorder and this overwhelming state, and then there's tikkun, right? So tikkun already, we all know tikkun. That's a word that's made its way into the vernacular. You know, probably we'll find it in the Oxford Dictionary very shortly of tikkun, right? So fix. There is a dialectic which exists between in Sifrei Kabbalah and Hasidut between these two concepts of tohu and tikkun. Best way to explain it is as follows. Let's say you have a sports team. Could be you had a football team, I don't know, right? Let's say you had a sports team. And you go out there and you tell them, let's say a football team. Okay, guys, just do something, right? Everybody just do your thing, right? Or a basketball team. And everybody on the team is what we call in the vernacular a ball hog. I don't know if anyone knows this affliction, a ball hog. Ball hog means that everybody just wants the ball and wants to put it in the, all want to put it in the net. And everybody will do whatever it takes to try to get the ball and put it in the net. So if you could imagine that, you have an entire team, all of them jumping on the ball at all times. Everyone is just following that ball. As opposed to, that's tohu. Everyone's chaotic, everyone's just doing their thing. Tikkun means, okay, you're going to go over here, and you're going to look, you're going to get the ball. From there, you're going to connect, you're going to pass the ball down court. You're going to be open to get the ball. You're going to get it to the tall guy who can dunk. So that's what he does. Right? So you have one guy who's great at getting the ball. You have another guy who's great at catching the ball, moving the ball down the court. You have a third guy who's good at putting the ball in the net. That's tikkun. Step by step by step. That's mesudar. It's orderly. Tohu versus tikkun. Tohu is passionate. Tikkun is structure. Tohu is romance. Tikkun is marriage. So now we're going to now apply this concept to the nature of love. Love is an anarchic force. It's tohu, or as we'd say in jargon, it's tohu dik, right? You have milchak, you have fleshik, you have tohu dik, right? This is tohu dik. Love is a tohu dik force, which if left free, it will not remain within any bounds set by custom or law, right? This idea of love conquering all. It's going above and beyond any realm of tikkun, any realm of seder, which is there. We have this dialectic now that we've set up. Love and marriage. So, what do we do with all this? You know, understanding this and having taken apart romance now, and it's like, I remember my first experience with a Bible course from YU, and not exactly quite sure what was happening there, but so we would learn a chapter of Tehillim, and there would be a lot of questions and a lot of mefarshim, and there was no like real conclusion. Like normally I was used to beginning, middle, end, right? Series, like concept. Here it was just like, okay, we just took apart one of the chapters of Tehillim. It's like sitting there on the table. Now what? Now what? So we've deconstructed romance a little bit. We've deconstructed what the roots of modern romance and our popular cultural romance is. Now, what are we supposed to do with all of this? So it's interesting, with regard to the libido, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that there's a small organ which is satiated with hunger, when fed it is never satiated, right? All of Kesef, lo yizba Kesef, the same idea of this dynamic which exists that is best when not fed, but when left hungry. We'll skip the second dot for a moment. Shagar parses to say that this is something which is best to long and not to achieve, because its achievement seems to be downhill, right? To long after someone, to write many, many sonnets about somebody is great, right? But then to actually achieve the object of your affections is the worst thing. Is the worst thing for your love, because it's become boring already. With which now we can follow up to the interesting sublimation that the Gemara explains for Hilchot Nida. Why is it that a couple spends? Sorry if there's spoilers over here, right? Spoiler, I'm sure we've all heard this already, but spoiler for those of you who have never heard. Why is it that a couple has times of physical closeness and times of physical separation in their marriage? The Gemara says that in order that you should renew the love, you should renew the passion. Like the bard says, your absence makes the heart grow stronger, right? That the yearning is a good thing. So now, I turn you to our next source in the packet. So, it would be page. Gotcha. Okay, we are almost done. So good.
The English page.
Okay, so this is if anyone can has the opportunity to read this whole essay inside, it's worth a read. Not being able to do justice to it in the 45 minutes, but also the essay that he's quoting for Rosal Vajic is also a worthwhile read. Definitely not doing justice with it within the 3 minutes we're going to look at it. But he says the following. The third level of sexual life, redeemed sexual activity, spells a new relationship between man and woman. It places sexuality on a new plane. The eternal quest of the unique, lonely individual to flee his solitude, buzzwords for Soloveitchik, right? To flee his solitude and share his personal existence with others, finds fulfillment in the cardinal medium. God somehow employs the flesh as an instrument of his will. Adam knew his wife Chava. Ve'yada Adam od et ishto. Adam knew his wife again. The Hebrew ve'yada, in its sense of knowing each other, sexually connotes the metaphysical element involved in the sexual function. The term ve'yada points towards an act of cognition and recognition. The I recognizes the personal existence of the you. If you should inquire as the essence and meaning of the institution of marriage, right? So Rav Soloveitchik is now going to save marriage, right? The Rav is saving marriage from Western society, because if it's boring, right? It sucks the life out of marriage, sucks the romance out of life. So Rav Soloveitchik is going to redeem marriage. That's why the book and the essay is called Family Redeemed. And I would say through marriage, the miraculous transition from the I-it contact to the I-you relationship occurs. Right? For those of us who know object relations a little bit, ich and du, ish and du, right? The I and the you. I is my self-perception. We're going back to the piece from Rav Kook from the beginning. I am in exile. So the I and the you. The you means that there's another I that exists. A second I, right? Second person, first person, second person, third person. It's not just language, it's also philosophy, Wittgenstein. So I, my self-perception, I'm in exile. But then marriage personalizes sexuality. That man knows the wife knows man. We know each other. Through the sexual act, it's not just a carnal act. It's not I-it. Because then the pleasure of the I's experience comes from an object and not from a subject. The I enjoys the it, as opposed to the I knowing you. Each person having an interaction with their spouse is ideally supposed to be both an experience of extreme physical closeness and emotional closeness by which we meet each other. We join each other both in a physical sense and also in an emotional intellectual sense. Through marriage, the miraculous transition from the I-it contact to the I-you relationship occurs. Marriage personalizes sexuality as a joint experience of the I and the you. Basically, the same drive that brings man to God makes him quest for his companion. Suddenly, that thing that we're looking for, that peace that we're looking for, the thought that it's only going to be staring into each other's eyes forever, and then marriage taking all of that away because I've reached my goal, I've reached the object of my longing. Rav Soloveitchik says, through Taras HaMishpacha, through Hilchos Nida, especially when taught properly, we can maintain and cultivate the sense of longing for each other, and the sense of coming to know each other, and knowing each other, knowing in the biblical sense, but meaning really being a meaning of mind and body. So, Slova Žižek, so it's fun just to try to say his name, Žižek, says a very, very similar thing. Listen to this. The only way to have an intense, fulfilling sexual relationship is not for the couple to look into each other's eyes, forgetting about the world, but while holding hands to look at together outside at a third point, the cause for which they are both fighting, for which they are both committed. You hear in this the I and the you together of Rav Soloveitchik, right over here. The redemption of sexual life, and the redemption of married life, Rav Shigar says, is this usage of Rav Soloveitchik's redemption of life of holding hands, walking together, focusing on this third point, of this search for the end of the search for loneliness. That's no longer an I-it contact, that the passion of one's search, the passion of one's romance, is only looking for an I-it interaction. I want to enjoy it. I want to enjoy pleasure. And once I have benefited, that is it. Rather, I and you are now together. And it. As Rav Shigar says, they're walking together, holding hands. Sometimes even glancing into each other's eyes. Now, of course, it's interesting because then when we think about how do we frame our marriages, Shavar Brachas, we don't think about the words. We think it's just like a magical formula or like a song. So, but when we say that the institution of marriage is supposed to contain within it all forms of happiness in the world, right? Sason and Simcha, Chasam, Kala, Gila, Rina, Ditsa, Chedva, Ava, V'Yachva. Ava and Achva, right? Love and brother and brotherhood, familiarness. Re'ut. Shalom and Re'ut, right? A Re'ah means a companion, it means a friend. That the redemption of our sexual life and our married life, and to take it out of the, you know, the threat of I knew a chatich that became a spouse, right? I knew a Israeli, right? I had to have a parallelism between I knew a woman who became a wife. I knew an object of desire that became an object of the everyday. It asked me to take out the garbage, you know, and change the kids and do carpool. But contextualizing this, all of us in our lifetime, the two of us together, the two of us walking, holding hands together, two lonely individuals meeting under a chuppah, trying to make sure we won't be lonely again. And a search not to be lonely again. Or Shigar says, and how can I come to the sense of closeness and intimacy, right? The sense of knowing each other. Vayeda. It's not just passion. It's not just romance. It's not just libido and id. And it's definitely not society's super ego of you have to get married because it's already, you're together for this long. Let's do the right thing. And if we don't really care about society already, we're just letting the id take over. And we have random hookups, and Tinder. So then it doesn't make a difference. But if we're looking for uplifting all of this, right, and we want to find what is redeemed through marriage, this is what is redeemed. Shagar says, I often tell couples that they must accept each other as they are, without each partner trying to change each other. The self-sacrifice and accepting of the other is the covenant, the only thing that lends totality to marriage. Marriage begins when we discover the person we married is not the person we thought we did. Right?
Where does the Shagar say this?
That is on page... grasping something obstructs this intimacy. Right? If I think I'm going to have intimacy now, I'm going to see intimacy, I'm going to find it now, you're not going to get it because it's elusive. It only flashes in and out. Its presence is rarely, if at all, enduring and direct. Again, think about that image of holding hands with your beloved. You're not going to be looking in each other's eyes forever, but you'll be holding hands together forever. It cannot be a goal, and hence the pitfall of romance. It's a state of mind that yields action, and through which solidarity and companionship there are manifest. The I and the you contact. Two more slides and we're done. It's revealed through distraction to the paradox of modesty, which exposes by concealing. Finally, 150. The walls of my home are not barriers that bear me down, right? Not the superego, not something which is too much imprisoning me, limiting me, not allowing me to pursue my passion. Rather, they are my identity. They delineate the place of my intimacy and my covenant. This is the place where it will happen. These flashes of intimacy, of knowing each other will happen, of recognition will happen. As opposed to, at the beginning, there was no intimacy between Yaakov and his wife, not holding hands together. But when she says, you remember, the little child that God gave us, she's grasping his hand and asking him to walk together with her. This is how we redeem sexuality and marriage. They do not make me finite. They are me. I am that I am, finite, infinite. And therefore, because we have no time, I didn't even bother to make a slide or photocopy it, but there's another essay in which Shagar explains the Arizal's metaphor of the sukkah. Right, the sukkah, which is what crowns over the whole of the Yamim Noraim, it's the end goal of all of Elul to Yamim Noraim. Really, Shmini Atzeret is the end. But he says that the mystery of it is Yemino Tachad Smolo Tachad LeRoshi VeYemino TeChapkeni. The Arizal says his left is under my head. The left is the small, is the gvura, is din, but yimino techapkeni, his right embraces me, his right encircles me. That sukkah, he says, is a hug. It's a hug, because it's again that return to intimacy, the return of being in that embrace. You know, once again, and that's why the sukkah is those walls. the Ikar, it's the walls in the Schach, it's that place, those walls of my house, which contain that relationship, to be in the Avir HaSukkah, and to have those sparks of intimacy, right, within the Sukkah. So this was a little bit of the world of Rav Shagar in terms of intimacy, of knowing oneself, of not being alienated from oneself, not being alienated from the other, and not to be alienated, and not to allow the institution of marriage to alienate the one from whom that you love most. There's much more to say, but we'll end up here.